year is 30 AD. A businessman is walking across Palestine with his staff. He's on his way into town just before sunrise. He's heading in for the day's business to take care of things, and he's late. And he's late to get together with the other merchants and the vendors. And so he decides to take a shortcut across somebody else's field, across the Middle Eastern sort of deserty tundra type environment. It's hilly, but it saves a little bit of time. And as he climbs the hilltop and he puts his staff down, he notices a different sound that wasn't like the other sounds of the rocks around him. And he takes a few more steps, and then he thinks, that's not right. And his curiosity gets the better of him, and he turns around, and he goes back, and he begins to unearth things right there in the dirt and the rock and the gravel, and up comes a chest. And he looks around, and he looks at it, and it's old. And the lock is old, and he decides to easily twist the thing off. And inside are silver and gold coins, old, and jewels of all sorts of colors that he'd never seen except in the most exquisite shops in Jerusalem. And he puts the lid back down, and his heart's racing, and he has no idea what he's going to do next. But he realized that some of the coins had Alexander the Great on them, so this is at least 300 years old. And he says, it's forgotten. Nobody knows this treasure's here. And so what he does is he puts it back in the ground, throws the stuff back over it, marks the spot so only he knows that it's there, and in his giddiness, races towards the town, telling himself, I am going to sell everything I have. My house, my land, my animals, whatever I have in my business, I'm going to sell everything and buy that field before somebody else finds that treasure. It's a really good deal. It was smart. And that's what he decided to do, and that's what he did. In a single moment, this man's entire life changed just with the thunk of his staff. Suddenly, nothing as important as that scrubby piece of property that nobody cares about. This story is captured by Jesus in a single thought. The kingdom of heaven is like treasure hidden in a field. When a man found it, he hid it again, and then in his joy went and sold all he had and bought that field. The kingdom of heaven is like that. I believe we are all on a treasure hunt in this life. That's what we're seeking. Each of us in this life hope to find the perfect mate for life. Each of us is trying to find that treasure of a family, of comfort, of safety. But Jesus makes it clear that the kingdom of heaven is more desirable than all else. And of course, we have to ask then the critical question, do we believe that? I mean, do we believe it? Is what Jesus said true, that the kingdom of God, the kingdom of heaven, is more valuable than everything else we would ever own? If Jesus is right, then we should invest in the things of heaven and not the stuff of earth. Why? Simply because it's a bad investment. Jesus says so. So let's get this straight, everyone. It isn't that Jesus thinks that money is bad or evil. It's a powerful tool. It's a gift from God. It's a wonderful thing, and it's meant to be enjoyed. Jesus never asked anyone to become some sort of financial martyr. There is a special calling of voluntary impoverishment that some take on if you're a Franciscan monk or something like that. But for everyone else in Christianity, no one's really being called to liquidate everything. Only a few. The more important feature is to say, money cannot become your master. It cannot become what you're entirely consumed by. Moreover, if you actually want to get the gist of what Jesus is talking about, he says this. He says this in the Gospel of Matthew in his famous Sermon on the Mount. He says, don't store up for yourselves treasure on earth where moth and rust will destroy, where thieves break in and steal, but store up for yourselves treasure in heaven where moth and rust do not destroy and where thieves don't break in and steal. How many of you locked your house this morning when you left? I replaced I replaced two sides of the house last year because I could walk up and poke my finger through a hole on the side of it. We're working on our kitchen and the countertop and the sink that, you know, we spent 16, 17 years with just went out and went in the trash. Like Garrett said, it goes to the dump. See, the point is that this is actually still about you. And I don't mean to fall into some sort of therapeutic gospel here, which we don't really like around here very much anymore, but it is still about you. You're storing up treasure for yourselves. You don't lose anything. Store up treasure for yourselves in heaven. Invest in the right things, not in the stuff that disappears. Because when you give, you actually have a deep, quiet, still, joyous peace that says, I just slew the dragon of consumerism and chasing my tail. It is a freedom that you can't put into anything but just a smile on your face. Lori and I have been working through this sort of Jesus's investment principle here. When it comes to generosity, over the years, I realize being a pastor, you know, would be really hypocritical if we didn't do what we ask everybody else to do. And so we've worked our gross household income up to that we give away 25%, and we're trying to work towards even more. Someday it'd be really cool to give away half of what we have. It's been a really interesting journey. And particularly, like I said, we've been remodeling the kitchen, and it's the first time we've ever done anything like this. We've only ever owned one house. And it is a really strange sensation. See if you can track with me on this. A strange sensation when you walk into Stuff Mart and you buy things. And there's this sort of really satisfying sensation. Like buying light fixtures is like eating dark chocolate. You know, it's rich and thick. And sticks on your palate for just a short amount of time. You see, life in suburbia, everyone, is this battleground of between pleasure now and investing in our neighbors and people we don't know. People in the inner city, at-risk students with Prodeo, our efforts that we do with the Persecuted House Church and the People's Republic of China, and all that list goes on. I have to tell you that the investment in heaven will someday look like when somebody comes up that you have never set eyes on during your lifetime, and they will walk up and shake your hand or simply say in their own tongue that you'll understand, thank you. Thank you for your gift. Thank you for being an honorable person in the name of Christ. You don't know that your gift allowed me to be taught by someone in China, and I heard the gospel. And that's why I'm here in heaven with you. That's the sort of return on investment we're talking about. Of course, you know, sometimes you don't have to wait all the way for heaven on this sort of thing to be with those that we serve. In a few weeks, actually October 17th, Jack Liu, his wife Hannah, and their son, their four-year-old son Ethan, will come to be with us for several months. So that'll be interesting. They are coming from the People's Republic of China, where they are harassed and routinely detained for their faith and for their work there. And Jack is a pastor and a leader of several churches and also many Bible schools, as they call them, where students go away for an entire year and learn the Bible, sequestered in an apartment. And several of us, of course, have been there to teach on that, and a couple of us have even spent an entire year there teaching. And so it's really quite an exciting thing to watch young people in China learning the gospel and their Bible and learning to worship. And Jack, one of the leaders of that, is coming to be with us, and his wife, and for the first time, all three of them will be here in our midst, living amongst us and doing the thing, and that'll be very cool. And so I would encourage you to hang out with Jack and Hannah and Ethan, have them over for dinner or go to lunch with them or something like that. Hear their story, you tell your story, and there's nothing more beautiful than saying, like, I got a friend 8,000 miles away. I got a friend in China. That's a cool sensation. If you have friends from around the world, you know what I'm talking about. We as a church should begin to live as though we are already here in heaven, that heaven is among us, that Jesus comes back, and when he comes back, that we will look like a place that is familiar to him. That's what we're trying to do. The elders just came back from a conference, an annual conference called the Christian Community Development Association. Christian Community Development Association. It's a conference, and it's a very young conference, by the way. Very amazing to watch so many thousands of young people. It is a conference for people who work in under-resourced inner-city neighborhoods, like the Hope Center down at Linwood and Benton, where our Eastland house is and where Chris and Tammy Jaley are. And I have to tell you, the conference is always astounding to me because they understand, and by the way, it's probably the most diverse evangelical Christian organization in the country. I mean, there are people from everywhere, all over. And it is a really astounding thing to sit there and worship in Chinese and Spanish and Swahili and English all at the same time. It feels like a different place. It just feels like you're in heaven. It's foreign, but it's familiar. Now, I don't say this because we're all buying into some sort of cheap, thin political correctness and some diversity and tolerance agenda, and like we're supposed to look like Sesame Street around here or something like that. That's not what I'm talking about. I'm talking about the reality of the fact is that we are all children of God, and that there's no such thing as African American and, you know, Anglo-American and Negroid and Mongoloid and Caucasian. There's none of that. We are all just children of God. That's the reality of it. And it's actually still a racist thing to actually begin to separate everybody out. Think about that one. And we in the church ought to represent that. We should be doing that, and that's what we're doing with As One. I think it'd be an interesting thing that we actually learn some of these songs. You know, Garrett Leahy, one of the other pastors here, has taught the staff, forced them against their will to sing a Spanish song for the last year or so. You know? But I think it'd be really cool that we would learn, you know, Somo Uno. And so that when Luis and Estella come here, you know, and Luis, he doesn't even speak Spanish. I mean, speak English. And that if we come here, we could sing that song. And they'd say, hey, there's a song I know. Or that when Jack and Hannah and Ethan get here next month, you know, that we could sing some songs in Chinese. That'd be kind of cool. We'd all look like idiots, but they would enjoy it. We are trying to tease this out. We are trying to act in a way so that we can become those sort of people. This is how it works, everyone. You give your money, and then you become the person who becomes a giver. It's the way it works. Where your treasure is, there your heart will be also. Not wherever your heart is, there your treasure follows. Because I'll tell you, wherever my heart is, my treasure ain't following it. But when I begin to write the checks and give the gifts and do the things of heaven, then I become that kind of person. It just works that way. After all, that's the way it's been working so far when you look at your checkbook, isn't it? That's just the way it works. But I think we would begin to look like that the people around here. I have a picture from back when I was in my 20s. I'd come home from church, and I sat there on the sofa, and there was nobody at home. None of my roommates were home or anything like that. And I don't know where it came from or why it came, but I was just sitting there listening to some worship music, and suddenly this thought came upon me. And I saw a picture in my mind of an ocean of faces. going on as far as the eye could see, all facing towards something that I could only construe as the throne of God. And a voice came to me and said, know as many faces in this crowd as possible. And that set my life on fire. Know as many faces here as possible. And I began to weep and cry. And I still don't know why. And that's why I'm here today. And they sang a new song saying, worthy are you to take the book and to break its seals, for you were slain and purchased for God with your blood, and men from every tribe and tongue and people and nation, all singing a song to God. Go in peace.